1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald is Associate Professor and Head of the School of Art, History and Cultural Policy here in UCD in Dublin, a publicly funded course, of course, where her research concerns Irish art history, visual culture, museum stroke heritage studies and cultural policy from the 19th century to the present. Her specialisations include the visual culture of famine, poverty, migration and diaspora, painting, engraving, photography, cinema, material, culture, memories, commemoration of public art, museum studies and heritage. The reason I say this is Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald has been tweeting over the last few days about a famine museum in Dough, D-O-O-D-O-A-G-H, in Donegal. And Pat Doherty is the man who runs this. It's a private museum, isn't it, Pat? You're not funded from the taxpayer.
No, it's just good. Private, just family run.
How are you keeping?
All right, thanks,
Si. Sunny today?
A really good day in Donegal.
Okay. Now, are you aware of the tweets of Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald with such credentials about the famine and the representation of the famine, head of the School of Art, History and Cultural Policy in UCD in Dublin? Are you aware of what she... Why were you aware that she visited your museum recently?
No, never was, no.
Okay. Did you see what she's written about your museum?
No, I haven't seen it. I'm not on Twitter. So I hear people mention it.
Okay, she says, she says, I've been to some ropey museums in my day, but this one takes the biscuit. Where do I even begin? This she begins. Is it a catafalque with a skeleton on it? You familiar with that image?
It's a hearse.
What a hearse, with kind of bicycle wheels on it.
It's a hearse from 200 years old.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah, of course it is those wheels from a cart, aren't they? Yes.
Well,
and it says, Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald in her tweet writes, Doctor, he may be gone too far to save. Then there are paintings on the wall of murals of the key figures of the peace process.
Yes, sir.
John Major, Albert Reynolds. That's Ian Paisley, is it? And
yes,
Alex Doherty, the priest. Okay. Hi. And Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald says IDs of all key figures to the peace process proving elusive. What does she mean by that? No, okay. She then has a piece. You have a safe house. Have you built in?
Well, the murals you see is in the safe house.
Okay.
And it tells the road to peace in Northern Ireland.
Okay, and the safe house is what, an IRA safe house?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it is.
And what's in it?
Well, see, it's a long story. You need to, how it all comes about. You want to hear how it all
comes
about?
Yeah, of course
about.
I do, Pat. Yeah, I love history.
Well, so one of these houses, myself, my family, we lived in it until 1984. That's
okay.
Our family home.
Right.
Family home. And we started off a museum there. And on that part of it, we tell the story of how we lived,
okay.
And how we fished, and how we caught rabbits,
okay.
And how we carried water and things like that there. So that's all part of it there. And the food we would have eaten, we gather that from the sea every day,
great.
And we take it to the people and show it to them. And then another part of it is a poitrine house. Inishowen was the capital of Ireland for making poitrine, so we show them how to make poitrine, and they get tasting poitrine.
All right.
And then at the poitrine one is connected to the wake house. And the wake house tells the story of people sitting beside their dead and the fear of being buried alive. So that's how it comes about, and that's how it gets the name wake.
Okay.
You sit beside the person, hoping the person will wake up.
Good point.
So when we did that part there, that was 1987. It was the anniversary of the famine, and we added a part onto it about the famine.
Okay.
Right? And the famine today takes up about maybe 15% of the museum, 10 to 15% of the museum. So. While we're doing, as it went all along then, we would get people who were close to the border in Northern Ireland,
mm-hmm.
and we get a cross community.
Yeah.
And so we also have a mass rock in it. We also have a Presbyterian meeting house, which for the Presbyterian side of it. And we also have an orange hall.
An orange hall.
So, and the orange, people from the Orange Order came, and it's all their memorabilia is in the orange hall.
Okay.
But when the Orange Hall was there, people would have complained about the Orange Hall, more from a Republican side.
Okay.
So that came the idea then of having to balance that part out. So I went to the Republican side, and the idea came about then of a safe house.
Okay.
and the safe house was built, and it was 2007, and that was part when the peace process was just coming together.
Yeah.
And it tells the story of the peace process in Northern Ireland, was Bertie Ahern and Albert Reynolds, all them people working together, yeah, working for peace. And the final room in it, there's seven rooms in it, each with a hidden doorway, and you go from one room to another. You go into the first room, you pull the fireplace, it opens up like a door, and that's where you get the hunger strikers. But the story broadens out and takes on people from David Irvine, Mo Mullen, yeah, Albert Reynolds, John Coombe, people who have all...
And these are all in these rooms in the safe house. These hidden
house
rooms, Maria. Yeah, okay.
And then you continue on to that there, and then you come to Ian Paisley and Gerry Adams sitting together at their table.
Okay.
And the final room, you'll find Martin McGuinness shaking hands with the Queen. So that's the safe house.
So the Queen and Martin McGuinness are in the safe house?
Aye, well, some people don't agree with that.
What's been said?
Some people might not agree with the Queen being on the safe house, a Republican safe house, but it's all part of the peace process.
Okay. So, and then you have... could the troubles have been avoided? Because there is...
And that all stories all came from people researched for people who worked.
But you said in the court, could the troubles have been avoided?
Could it?
And this is on the wall in the safe house.
Aye.
Okay. And this is written by
Eddie Gallagher.
Yeah. And you describe him as a Republican long-term prisoner.
Aye.
You don't describe him as a kidnapper, a bomber, and a terrorist.
No, because
that's where he was.
If you go through that whole building,
okay, well,
so you've all the hunger strikers there.
I understand that. Okay, but Eddie Gallagher, you use Eddie Gallagher for the source of this piece, could the troubles have been avoided? A senior figure in military intelligence has sworn that both beliefs are wrong, that the USA is a friend of Ireland, and the Unionists believe that England was a friend of the Union. This man came to Donegal in 1991. He said that this is the senior military intelligence. He said that the British government in the early 1970s was prepared to pass control of Northern Ireland to the Dublin government. The proposal was vetoed by America for its own benefit. NATO had sensors anchored off Northern Ireland coastline, which monitor Soviet submarine traffic from the Baltic towards Europe's back door. At that time, the Republic was neutral and not a member of NATO. Therefore, the Irish government could not be trusted to look after these censors. But this situation would later change. In 1994, the IRA called a ceasefire. A year later, the Irish government and NATO started negotiations. This is news to me now, a lot of people. NATO and the Irish government started negotiations. The Good Friday Agreement was signed in 1998. In 1999, the Irish government signed a deal with NATO to cooperate on military matters. It's not on the public record anywhere.
No, but that's...
If this is true...
Right,
Eddie, as if it is true, because this is a statement. A year later, the Irish government and NATO started negotiations. The USA and NATO manipulated events and bear a heavy responsibility for 35 years of suffering and hardship on the island of Ireland. However, none of us can say his heart is totally clean. You're talking there, Eddie. His hands are totally pure. You're talking there, Eddie. As we wish to be forgiven, let us forgive those who sinned against us and ours, but always keep an eye out for the picture that we rarely get to view. Source, Eddie Gallagher, Republican, long-term prisoner. Have you lost your mind, Pat Doherty, given that credibility in your fantastic museum?
A terrorist, a bomber,
and a kidnapper. Saying that the Irish government started negotiations with NATO in 1995. That the USA and NATO manipulated events and bear a heavy responsibility for 35 years of suffering and hardship, when the majority of killings in Northern Ireland and indeed in the Troubles were caused by Eddie Gallagher and his buddies, including children, including women, including babies. And Eddie Gallagher says the responsibility for this now rests with the USA and NATO. And you have this, you give this credibility on the wall of your lovely museum. Are you mad?
Well, no, I think it's worth a debate. It's worth listening to.
Is Mr. Gallagher available? Can we ring Eddie Gallagher? Where are his sources on this? He now runs, I think he runs a business in Donegal. But where are his sources? Did anyone say this is what the eminent professor in the associate professor in UCD is saying? I've been to some ropey museums in my day, but this one takes the biscuit. Where do I even begin? And then she criticised the stuff on the figures who were key to the who wrote the piece on the safe house? Would that be Eddie? Would that be historian Eddie Gallagher again?
What, on the peace house?
Safe house. The safe house, a secret place, a sanctuary, a suitable place. In the past, during the Troubles in Northern Ireland, these buildings were common in the Republican loyalist areas. To explain it easier, you can imagine you're being chased down the street in your own town by either the army, police or Garda. You then run to one of these houses. Sometimes it could be a pub. To get in the door before the police catch you, get in the door, you will have disappeared and they cannot find you. You've entered through a secret room.
Who wrote that? I wrote that.
You've been chased down the street in your own town by either the army, I presume it's the British army, is it?
Whatever army. Doesn't matter what country you're in.
But there's no army on the streets of the Republic of Ireland. Never has been. Okay. Would you even put a piece at the bottom of Eddie Gallagher, Republican stroke long-term prisoner. Would you not put at the bottom one of the longest serving prisoners in Ireland because he committed the most heinous crime of kidnapping an innocent man, Tadhg Airme, an industrialist, damaged not just his life, but damaged the industrial prospects of Ireland for years because of kidnapping industrialists, that he was a terrorist and a bomber. Would you put that down?
Well, I don't think it needs that.
Why does it not need it?
No, but you could go further on other buildings and like the Orange Hall, and you could pick out things too. No, we can all pick out things, but there's a balance when you go from one building to another. There's a balance between the two, right? And no, we get a lot.
Yeah, but I think your effort is brilliant, and I love those museums. Well done, you and your family. And I think it's incredible that you and your family, up to 1984, were living in a house that didn't have running water and electricity. But I know that was for a lot of people as well. That in itself is an incredible insight. But balance is not about putting truth up against a lie. It's about putting one opinion up against another opinion. And what Eddie Gallagher is saying, unless we've all been drinking very heavily sedated water over the last 60 years, what Eddie Gallagher says, I've never heard one historian, one journalist, one magazine of left, right or lunacy say that the cause of the Troubles in Northern Ireland and they must take responsibility for 35 years of suffering are because of the USA and NATO. And the reason NATO wanted to keep Ireland divided was they had sensors anchored off the Northern Ireland coastline, which monitor Soviet submarine traffic from the Baltic to towards Europe's back door.
And do you think, could it be true?
It's not true. Like, why don't you turn around to me and say, there is an apparition in my studio at the minute. I say to you, it's true, there isn't. And I say, how can you prove there isn't? Because it's just so lunatic, the notion of it. No historian, no journalist, no politician, no diplomat. And there have been rogue diplomats. In other words, diplomats who disagreed with their own government's policy would say this. No one has ever put forward a thesis that the heavy responsibility for 35 years of suffering and hardship on this island is due to the USA government of the USA and NATO manipulating events to keep those sensors off the north coast of Ireland.
Well, very few people have read that. No, on the wall. Very few people have read it. And the only group that ever came to me and did read it, and they were very interested in it, was a group of ex-British soldiers.
Yeah.
And they came, and they were very interested. And they said that they always questioned the reason why they were ever in Northern Ireland.
That's true, but that's nothing got to do with NATO and the USA being responsible for 35 years of killings, most of which were carried out by Eddie Gallagher and his mates.
There's more people than Eddie Gallagher,
as it's now. But if you look at it, and then we'll go through the figures if you want, the majority of killings in Northern Ireland, the majority of killings in the Troubles, because there was killings in Dublin, there was killings in Belturbet, they were loyalists, there was killings in Warrington, they were the IRA, there was killings on the M62, that was the IRA, there were killings in Brussels, that was the IRA, there were killings in Germany, that was the IRA, there were killings in London, that was the IRA. But most of the killings, not all, of course, it's not simple, were carried out by the IRA and Republicans, as Eddie Gallagher calls himself. And you're allowing him write the history on your fantastic museum.
No,
Have
you visited the safe house?
No, I haven't. I'm just going on the description.
But if you do visit it, You have the names of every person who died in the Troubles in Northern Ireland.
I know, I have it on my own wall in my own house. And that is that incredible quadruple page feature from the Irish Times about 1998, where they published the names of the three.
It's all there.
Well, it's not all there, because we now know, and I know with my research with Fraith McClemens on the Children of the Troubles, that more people were killed than were ever recorded. We reckon up to 30% more children, which means there were nearly 4,000 people killed in the Troubles. And it's a great... Now, that list is so long, Pat Doherty, that you'd need a magnifying glass to read it. The typeface has to be so small.
Right.
But anyway, Pat, people love your museum, except the professor of head of culture of the famine in UCD, Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald. Are you upset by what she has said? I've been to some ropey museums in my day, but this one takes a biscuit.
Am I upset?
Yeah.
No, that's part of life.
Good man, you're right.
You're right.
Take it on the chin. Okay, here
came to the door and said it's who she was.
Okay. And they said you had someone in an Aran sweater at an eviction long before Aran sweaters were ever invented or worn in Donegal. Okay. Do you think that's nitpicking or petty?
Well,
petty fogging.
If she wants to donate a bit of money towards the...
Okay, you're doing your best.
And by the way,
your charge in is very reasonable. Tenner for adults and £6 for children. But Patricia Holmes, you went to Pat Doherty's Famine Museum in Doe in Donegal. Go ahead, Patricia. You're from Belfast and you loved it.
What about your joke? Kay will too.
Gurma, her fad. Like a Suhain.
Do you know what, Joe?
What?
I'm sitting here crying. I thought we were talking about, I didn't know the information about what we're talking about now.
Okay.
it's really upsetting. I've been up to your man's place, and it was before, I thought somebody was going to be given out about his wee museum before he'd done all the political shite.
Yeah, but just okay. What? Tell us, Patricia, what you liked about the museum.
There was none of that going on when I was there.
And did you read that piece? Could the Troubles have been avoided?
No, you don't need to read it.
Why not?
Because you're living with it every day, Joe.
Yeah, but you don't believe that the USA and NATO are the cause of the.
I didn't hear that.
Okay. Patricia, we'll start another way. Just tell us.
I thought the phone call I was getting today.
No, but you contacted us off the back of when I mentioned it in the promotion. Isn't that right?
Yes, but yeah, I thought there was some woman given out about...
Well, there is. You said it's this woman called Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald. I've been to some ropey museums in my day, but
No, but I didn't know that. I'm sorry. I thought she was just given out because of the famine village and the whole setup about the whole wake and
just to be fair, you thought that was good. That worked. You thought that was
brilliant.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. Okay.
And you're teaching people the way people used to wake people. Why you covered the mirror?
Yeah.
Why you put you snuffed it? You used to put a thing of snuff.
That's right. Yeah.
Just in case you woke up. And that's why we wake her dead, because of lead poisoning.
Okay.
But I didn't know the conversation was going about... I haven't been there in 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
So I didn't know the whole political thing, and I'm awful sorry, Joe.
Okay, Patricia, no worries. How are you keeping anyway?
Well, do you know what? I'm awful annoyed now.
Why?
Well, do you know what? But I didn't know the conversation was going to be about that there.
Are you annoyed that I mentioned the Eddie Gallagher stuff?
Who's Eddie Gallagher? I don't even know him.
He was a member of the IRA, but he was expelled from the IRA for being too rough at one stage, I think. But he was a kidnapper.
They're all scumbags, Joe.
Okay.
You know, I thought that... I was thinking somebody was given out about the famine village. I didn't know all this political thing was going on up there.
Okay.
because I haven't been there in years.
Well, Patricia, I won't say where you are, but I think you're in Belfast. We won't say what part of Belfast. And how is Belfast at the moment after the 12th, for example?
Well, Joe, wind your neck in, will you?
Okay.
Sure, you know the frigging crack. Thank God it was all quiet.
Yeah, great.
And sure, I was in Galway. I wasn't up here. Sure, any sensible person in the north gets out of here.
Yeah.
But thank God it was all quiet. But Joe, I swore in my life, I didn't know.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's fine.
The conversation
take your
was going to be about
but you're,
this.
Well, in fairness to Pat Doherty, what you're saying is, Patricia,
I don't know who even Pat Doherty is.
Yeah, he runs the he owns that museum that you like so much.
And is he an IRA man?
No, not at all. Good God,
right.
No. What you're saying is, Pat, I visited your museum 3 years ago, and I thought it was very educational.
Yes, because
okay.
There was no political shite going on then.
Okay.
It was all to do with the wake and how you wake the dead. And, Joe, it's just true. Donegal, as you know,
Ulster
is the best county in Ireland.
Beautiful.
You know? And I thought there was some woman coming on, giving out about maybe things not being
well,
up
we've
to
asked,
scratch.
We've asked the professor in UCD to come on. She's the one that's been criticising the museum.
Well, but I didn't even know that.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know it was all about political stuff. So the woman shouldn't have phoned
isn't everything, but Patricia, isn't everything political?
Joe, you're wrecking my head. Joe, can I ask a favour?
Yes, Patricia. Wind
tell
my neck.
Tell Ronan Collins.
I love him.
Right, tell Ronan Collins.
Yeah.
Don't be playing Simply the Best.
Okay.
Right?
Seeing
and
smart.
Another thing.
Oh, good, okay.
I was in Galway and I heard the Sash. He played the Chieftains. And tell Ronan not to play that again.
Oh, okay, I have a long list from tomorrow.
No, that's only two songs. Simply the Best and Don't Play That Stupid Song from the Chieftains.
Okay. Now, Patricia, are you any relation to Eamon Holmes?
I'm saying nothing.
Because I met him. I was up in Belfast 2 weeks ago. And I interviewed him.
And? What did you think of him?
He's one of the most fascinating men I've ever interviewed.
Okay, that's good. And what did you like about him?
I liked that he gave us a full day for an interview.
Did he give you a dinner?
I didn't want a dinner. Look at me. I don't need a dinner, Patricia.
Yes,
less dinners I need. But he was very, very, very open, very, very honest, about growing up and the troubles and the effect it had on him and trying to get home as a Catholic through a Protestant area, fear and all that carry on. But anyway, you won't tell me
What? I phoned you thinking, wee house in Galway that I rent out. And I thought this conversation was going to be about people taking the hand.
Okay,
and I didn't know there was any political talk.
Okay.
And I don't want to hear any more,
okay.
Thank you.
And how will we finish the call on a summary?
Well, you know what?
On a kind,
all I'm saying
on a kind
is,
note.
Tell Ronan Collins, don't be playing Simply the Best.
Well, who should he play?
Well, Joe, you do your research and you know why I don't want them to play that song.
Okay.
And the only reason he played the Sash was because it was one of the Chieftains' birthdays.
Yeah, and the reason...
And he just said, and I was in the Free State and I thought, that song I'll not hear. And I friggin' did hear it. So, when I see Ronan Collins, I'm going to choke the life out of him.
Okay. And Patricia, the reason you don't want Simply the Best is that it has got connotations on the other side, hasn't it? They play it, don't they?
Right. You know what, Joe?
Oh, what?
I'm going to give you a big kiss and I'm going to say cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Because...
Bye-bye. I know. Okay.
No, it's not on, Joe.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Enjoy the rest of the summer.
All be well.
Okay, all been well, exactly. Slán, Patricia, that's Patricia. Slán, lad.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're talking about the Doe Famine Museum and Village in Donegal, run by a family since 1984. They lived in one of the houses, by the way, without running water electricity until 1984. And the head of the famine, so to speak, and cultural representation and iconography around the famine is Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald. She's in UCD, Associate Professor, in charge of the art of the famine, so to speak. And she's been there and she's been on Twitter excoriating this little museum. Michael Shanley, you visited the Doe Famine Museum last week.
That's correct, Joe. Myself and my wife, we were on holidays in Ballyliffin, which is a beautiful part of the country, and we actually seen it advertised or as a place to visit. And we visited, and I want to say to Pat there, we had the most beautiful 2 hours probably over 5 days away.
Great.
In your place. It's a small, appeared to be a small family-run business. We were treated with coffee and tea before we started. Imagine €10 piece. And I've been just listening there, Joe, to the conversation, but the way that this tour toss was ran was that there was nearly two parts to it. The first part would have been showed us around the three kind of cottages there and showed us, let's talk about the famine and about fish and how that assault the fish to survive. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, all sea areas came off a little better in the famine than others. So there's a lot of good historical stuff, including the Keenan and the poaching and how poaching was bartered as fish was bartered for survival. But at that stage, I presume it was Pat Doherty himself, the man, he went on and he talked. He says, I'm going to leave you now, but he says, he actually made a lovely talk that I thought, I commented to my wife, and he said that what was ahead was that there was an orange order hall. Now, I come from the border, and I never was in one, so even what I saw, I don't know whether it was fully right or not. But getting away from that, he basically said that, to go and walk around, and that as far as he, that we were in a time of peace, and that there was the orange hall on one side, and there was this safe house by the way, and he says, and that this is the future, and we need peace in Ireland. I actually thought he was brilliant. Now, we continued, Joe, and for the first time in my life, I looked into an orange hall, and we went to this safe house. I have no clue what you're talking about for the last half hour, because I didn't see Anthony, first of all. Mm. Anthony written down, didn't see Anthony.
That's there,
down.
It's there. Pat says it is up on the wall.
It may be there. It wasn't there for me or my wife, that's what I'm saying. Okay. And that's for us. We were in there, we walked around at that safe house. I took it, to be honest, which is nearly as a bit of, I suppose it is a bit of history, but in one, you had Gerry Adams in a room, and you had John Major. It was everywhere, but it was just part of finishing up in what we, the way that he actually finished it up was that this is where we are today, and this has all gone by, and we're all together. And I actually have to say this, though, for a man that has run a business in a pretty near enough a border area. Yeah. I come from a little village called Kilty Clogher on the Fermanagh border.
I think
he'd done a fantastic job, because that man will have visited from both sides of the community, and I want to totally commend him on the way that he handled it. I'm sorry to hear about all this other stuff, because the reason that I'm sorry to
What do you think that this professor in UCD is tweeting, Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald? She says it's. I've been to some ropey museums in my day, but this one takes the biscuit.
Well, I would totally disagree with it. I think for a small business, a family business, it was one of the best. And I'm a little bit enough into history to know the famine and to have read up on it. And to be honest, there was no blame. There was no apportion of blame in any talk to say that the British were responsible for the food or this. There was none of that. It was a pure... And he broke it up and he left. And there was nobody... to travel, you'd done your last bit of a walk on your own. I didn't read that, to be honest, which I never saw it. And I just want to commend the people. It must be very difficult to run a small business in an area like that in Donegal. And I say, Pat Doherty, well done. I come from a little village in Kilty Clogher where they have their own small little museum on Sean McDermott.
I know,
I wouldn't like to hear people. I wouldn't be happy to hear people coming in and criticising people that are trying to do their best. I think they don't have a fantastic job, Pat.
And we're trying to get the the professor from UCD across the road onto the programme. But yeah. she said...
I understand that, Joe, but she may be a professor, but I'm Micheál Shanley, an ordinary person that comes from County Leitrim, and myself and my wife had one hell of a day. And actually, she's downstairs. She's very upset because upset at the treatment. I'm not accusing anyone of the... But of the tone of this path, because I thought I was coming on here to that someone was going to give out about that it was too dear or this, that or the other. I didn't think this was a walk into something that I actually don't like, to be honest with you. Now,
okay.
You know?
But that's my
feelings. Yeah, well done.
Yeah, and thanks for contacting us, Michael. Joe, good afternoon.
Joe, I just have a quick point to make about the Family Museum. I hope the sign is still up. I was on holidays there about 10 years ago, driving by Doha. I saw the sign out. It said, Famine Museum, breakfast served all day.
Okay.
And I thought that was certainly eye-catching. And I didn't actually go to the museum myself, but one of the people in the party did. And they said the thing that they thought was the best was, you may have heard of the expression, a dead ringer. And I'm sure you know what's coming next. It was when a person they thought wasn't dead was put down in a coffin. There was a string from the coffin going up to beside the grave. There was a little brass bell. And if the person was still alive in the coffin, they pulled the string and the bell rang so they'd know they weren't dead. They were buried prematurely. So that's where the expression dead the
ringer.
Dead ringer.
Okay.
So I haven't been to the museum. I suspect
because of today, and I hope a lot of, like, I'm just thinking of Leitrim, I'm thinking of Kilty Clare, I'm thinking of Sean McDermott's house, I'm thinking of the incredible folk museum just outside Ballinamore in Leitrim, I'm thinking of the incredible Jackie Carey Library and Museum in Ballinad. It's such incredible places, and the Famine Museum, and the Cage of Fields, and it goes, and Strokestown, and Castlebar, the National Museum just outside Castlebar. But anyway, what we want to do is encourage people to go to it. But as I say, this professor has serious issues with the portrayal.
But the thing about
she's entitled to have, like.
But the thing is, going to a museum, you're not sitting in academic examination required to write down all the correct answers. You're going there to pass the time and to enjoy yourself. Basically, that's what it is. And I try to tell people that, you know, while you're going around looking at museum exhibits, what you want is a good story. You don't want the actual facts that on the 15th of October, whatever date it was, you know, your man... You want a good story behind it. That's what you want.
And what do you think? I don't know if you heard the story earlier on that I read out. Could the troubles have been avoided? This is a poster on the wall.
There's a possibility, Joe, that might be taken from something that was known as Operation Eastland, where it was a Soviet plan to attack Britain coming down across the north of Finland, Norway, in over the north of Ireland to avoid any radar. So that's why they wanted early warning radar kept still in the north of Ireland. If you check out Operation Eastland,
Like it's stated on the wall here, and it's printed, the USA and NATO manipulated events to bear a heavy responsibility for 35 years of suffering and hardship on the island of Ireland.
Well, I mean, you could say likewise that, you know, Lloyd George was responsible for the 35 years of manipulation or whatever on the island of Ireland. You can go back and pick out on anything you want and pinpoint it down.
Yeah, but I know that's been said before, the partition of Ireland and all the carry on, but I've never heard the USA and NATO been blamed for the troubles.
No, but I mean... No, but the reason of...
We'll say
the reason why Britain wanted to hang on to the north of Ireland, well, it was costing them so much in terms of manpower, of soldiers going over there and costing them so much in terms of money. What was the ultimate reason? If you think back, Joe, to the 80s, you had a Greenham Common where they were bringing in cruise missiles. There was a great fear, Joe, from about 1960 onwards, from the Cuban Missile Crisis the whole way up till about the end of Ronnie Reagan's term in office. That the major threat to the West was going to come from the Soviet Union. And if it was going to hit Britain, what way would it hit Britain? It would come across Finland, Norway, down across the north and by the back door, if you like. So it was necessary to have long-range radar based there. And if you had an Irish Republic, would they sort of say, well, go ahead with your 300-foot mast to communicate with submarines at sea and continue with your long-range radar?
I'm just disbelieving. That's all. I mean,
you're right to disbelieve, Joe,
because it's not true.
But not that it's
the troubles.
Not true.
No, the call. Let's
not
be.
That it's not,
no,
Joe,
hang
not
on,
that it's
Joe. 4,000 people, as every single day in Northern Ireland, right? Yeah. Every single day in Northern Ireland and beyond. There's at least 10 families every family is grieving.
Absolutely.
One of the people I interviewed recently, and for another aspect of my work in television, and he said to me over a long, long television interview that half of Northern Ireland is still in bits, he meant the people, because of what happened in the Troubles. So it's a really, really, really serious, probably the most awful thing that's happened on our island, for whatever reason, in the last century, since the famine, in terms numerically since the famine. However, to then try and put up on a wall that in a museum, that it was caused, that the USA and NATO manipulated events to bear a heavy responsibility for such a, demeans the lives and the deaths and the grieving of all those families. That's all. That's all. We leave it at that. I want to bring Frieda in.
You're right, Joe, insofar as it wasn't the sole cause of it, but it was a contributory factor to why it prolonged it.
Okay, Joe, good evening, my God. Joe, Frieda, good afternoon. 51551 is our text number. You've just left the Famine Museum in Doha.
Yeah, literally left it about an hour ago.
Will you explain to people where... Are you from Dublin, Frieda?
Yeah, from Dublin.
Will you tell people where it is? Because I want people to go to it. Where is it?
So it's up on the Inishowen Peninsula, which is the very, very north of Donegal, as you're heading from Malin Head. And it's just outside Ballyliffin, so kind of between... I guess between Ballyliffin and Carndonagh.
And did you drive through Omagh to get there, or you went up through Bundoran?
We went up, kind of through the north and via Derry and in that way. Okay. We've been travelling around Inishowen a bit,
So what do you think of the museum you've just walked out of?
Loved it. And Paddy and the family up there are just great. They're so warm. Now, it's an outsider museum. It's not like your typical National History Museum or National Gallery or whatever, because it's run independently by an independent family. But the work put into that is just phenomenal. And we actually learned quite a bit, you know. The thing that really struck me as fabulous, that I've nearly brought tears to my eye, and I know that sounds really cringeworthy, is their segment on traveller culture and history in Ireland.
Okay.
And that was huge for me because, I mean, I've worked with travellers for over 10 years. There'd be itinerants a couple of generations back in our family as well, not ethnic Irish travellers. And what always has struck me throughout my whole life is that traveller history is not taught in this country.
Okay.
You don't learn it in school. You don't hear it in museums. You don't hear really much about it on telly, and most of what you hear about traveller culture in Ireland is negative. Now, I walked in there and I saw the old, wagon, which was amazing, with the horse and some of the implements, which I thought was brilliant. But when I looked at the information around the walls, it was amazing. It was factually accurate. As I say, I've worked with travellers for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
I've written quite a lot on traveller ethnicity and campaigned around it as well. There was quotes from Chrissy Hand, from other travellers that, you know, are known in the history or in the community. There were photographs that were just fabulous. What I loved about it was that his information was coming from traveller organisations. It was coming from travellers themselves. A lot of the stuff was written by travellers. And you just don't see that. I mean, what I felt it was doing was really giving a voice to people in our community, in our society, that don't have a voice. And people that are often only portrayed negatively in history books, if they're even included at all, and in the media often as well. So for me, that was huge. The other aspect that struck me was that, I mean, I've never really been to an Irish history museum that included stuff about the Orange Order and in a way that depicted it as it would be. Now, I wouldn't be a fan of the Orange Order or the UEF or any loyalist stuff at all, not remotely. But it felt to me like
remember the Orange Order have nothing to do with the UVF. But anyway...
I know. But what I'm saying is I suppose it looked into that whole side of the Troubles as well, rather than just our own side. And, I mean, to me, it was unusual. And I know in the media, I work in media myself, we often talk about balance. And to me, this was like, clearly it's an outsider museum. It's done independently. It's so much work has gone into it, which was amazing.
Okay.
But I felt like the only thing that stuck out as a little bit out of place for me was the spooky room. But it was for kids. You know what I mean? It's like the scary bit in the wax museum or whatever. And that's for when you have kids there and you want to give them a fright or have a bit of crack.
And did you?
So that was the only thing that I felt didn't fit with the history and culture. But
and did you go into the safe house room?
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. If I was in there on my own, I would have got stuck in there. But I had my boyfriend with me and he was great at finding all the ways of pulling back the wardrobe to open a door and opening a bench to get through the wall. And it was very good.
Okay, Frieda.
No, I shouldn't be spoiling this for the next visitors. I shouldn't be.
No,
just,
it doesn't.
Yeah, definitely
that's a taster.
Having known people on the Isle of Doe, or Doe Isle, as they call it, over the years, I know people that lived there and grew up there for generations. It's a very, very kind of marginalised area of the country. There's not even a shop or a pub on that part of the isle.
Okay.
You can drive onto it, but they call it an isle. So okay. People out there are inventive. There was a man I knew years ago called John McGonagall, Lord rest him, and he was from there, born and bred, generations back. He knows Paddy, or he knew Paddy when he was alive. And he invented everything that he needed. The people out there, they're so innovative.
Innovative, yeah.
So right, creative. That, okay. Yeah, I just think it's...
And where are you going next? Are you on your holidays, Frieda?
Yeah, on holidays, yeah.
And where are you going next?
Oh, we're heading around Donegal. We've a few more places to see. So,
right.
Not sure yet. See where the road is.
And remember, do Sleeve League if you can. I know it's down the other end.
Sleeve League.
Beautiful.
I don't know if we get that far.
Beautiful.
But we'll have a look. We'll have
okay,
a look.
Good. I mean, we've got Frieda of Joe at RT.ie.
Yeah,
Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Told one of the team, this is the second time today, I think, spoke to Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald in UCD, who wrote these assessments of the museum we're talking about, saying it's I've been to some ropey museums in my day, but this one takes a biscuit. It's the Dough Museum. It's a Dough Famine Museum in the Inishon Peninsula in Donegal. But Kevin Fox, and she's not available to come on, which is hopefully she will be tomorrow. Kevin Fox, Kevin, good afternoon.
Hey Joe, how's it going?
Good. You were there 3 weeks ago. You loved it.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we were up there for about 5 or 6 days up around Inishon, and friends of ours up there, you know, giving us a few tips on where to go and things to do. And they mentioned the Famine Museum, and I suppose I just had a general interest in history or whatever. Yeah. And I said we'd go and visit it and put in a bit of time. And I was just really, really impressed with the whole setup. The staff there were absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. Everybody we met were really, really friendly. I mean, it was very reasonable. It was €10 and they give you a cup of tea or a coffee. And yeah. They kind of worked it well, because obviously they have organized little tours. So, you know, you can have your tea or coffee before or afterwards. So while you're sitting around waiting on a tour, you know, you can do that instead of just, you know, twiddling your thumbs. So the whole thing, just the whole setup, and that lad, Paddy, was... just very, very, very genuine and very, very okay. interesting, you know. I went from the famine point of view. I just was interested in maybe learning.
Did you go into the recreated Orange Hall?
I did. Yeah, I absolutely did. I was amazed that it was there. I just found it very interesting, you know. I just, you know, I'm a believer in live and let live, and I don't know an awful lot about the Orange side. So I found it interesting to go in and spend a bit of time there and that. And I was... Because, you know, at the end of the day, it was obviously in a very nationalist area, and I'm just kind of thinking to myself, you know, the family that organised this museum, are they getting any grief because of the Orange Hall or whatever? And
we can ask Pat that yourself. Pat, are you getting any grief because of the Union Jacks and the Ulster flags hanging in the Orange Hall and the Orange Hall itself, Pat?
Well, in the past, we would have got grief for it. And that's the reason that the safe house was built, to balance out that story.
Okay.
No, that's the whole idea, of balance it out. So,
And what type of grief were you getting?
Well, people didn't want an Orange Hall there now. That's just been, you get phone calls to say get rid of it. And
Get rid of it or what?
Oh, well, you make up your own mind then.
And were they anonymous calls, or did you recognize?
No, I've been anonymous them, did I say.
Anonymous calls threatening to burn down the Orange Hall?
Well, they didn't threaten, but they didn't want it there. They weren't happy with it being there. So when you get the phone calls like that,
okay.
And...
Well,
that's the reason of the safe house becoming
okay.
part of it.
Yeah,
and
okay.
And
so you stood your ground. You said, no, it's part of the history, and part of the history of Donegal as well. There's orange lodges in Donegal, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
So you stood your ground, and maybe the world has changed even a bit more now, Pat, where people don't go in for that stupid behaviour, burning other places down.
I definitely so. You know, people, there's a different outlook here in the top part of Ireland. We look at one another in a different way altogether.
Okay.
And we work together as one. And, that's going to be the future for us.
She also says copy editing. This is the associate prof in UCD. Copy editing and source attribution, not strong points in this museum.
Well, a lot of the famine stuff has been done by my wife. She's a PhD in history. So,
okay.
You know, so that's one doctor talking about to another doctor. So I'm not really into that. Most of my history here of doing the museum is to bring people together to understand one another.
She tweeted a photograph of Is it an old iron bedstead which has a rose bed in it?
A rose bed. And how that came about was one time when the first bloom garden, she should have put up the story with it. When the first bloom garden started, myself and three other people, one from Dublin, decided to raise money for the Simon community.
Okay.
And we put a garden onto bloom garden. And it raised 17,000 that bed. And that's where that bed sits there today.
Oh, well done.
For the Simon community.
And you've written on it, life is not a bed of roses. And Dr. Emily Mark Fitzgerald has tweeted, somewhat of an understatement at the Famine Museum, but a useful reminder.
Well, no, because she didn't put the story with it, because life is not a bed of roses, because it was to raise awareness for the homeless. And the story's beside the bed.
Okay. Well, Pat, how are you doing numbers-wise with the lockdown?
I know it's good now. There's about 30 people standing here waiting to go, waiting me for to get off this phone.
Great.
And, you know, it's been good now. Donegal's been really on a high at the minute. And we have a lot of new attractions in Donegal. So we have Wild Ireland, we have
It's fantastic, county. And have you is there any facility in, for example, in this piece I was talking about, could the troubles have been avoided? Is there any, do you have books there saying these give an alternative view that was NATO and the USA's fault for the troubles?
Oh, well, maybe that's something we could look at in the future. That'd be something we could look at. Because it's there for everybody to see. No, we're not hiding it. And
I know you aren't, and you spoke freely about it. Pat Doherty, is this your livelihood now, Pat?
This is it. Every day, 7 days a week.
And would you be open if people had pieces, from the famine or from Irish history that they'd like to give you? Then that's important.
No, thank you much for that.
And you've invested so much in this village in terms of your time and money and your own household that I'm sure you'd look after it very, very well. Okay, John O'Bourne, John, you were there. You want to commend Pat Doherty on the Dole family?
Yeah, it's a fabulous place, and there is slight inaccuracies, sort of the famine house being demolished by the bailiffs and that, and maybe one or two of the costumes is not quite right. But, I mean, the guy is betraying a piece of history. And I didn't look at the policeman's buttons to see if they were correct period.
Okay.
I was satisfied at the picture that I seen there that betrayed it. And I think a famine museum, and that's what... the only thing I'd have is that it's not a famine museum. It's loads of museums, different parts of Irish history.
Yeah, yeah.
The Great Hunger, rather than the famine, it'd be more accurate. Mm. As we all know, there wasn't any famine in Ireland. There was plenty of food. They wouldn't give it to us, that's all. Mm. The other point, Joe, is you're talking there about the Americans and the NATO and all that. I worked in Donegal as a young man from about late 1968 till about 1971, and I actually seen what I considered was a nuclear Russian submarine.
Yeah, no doubt.
Off the coast of Donegal.
Yeah.
And some of the fishermen that I got to know quite well would tell me on several occasions that a net had been caught by both American nuclear submarines.
Yeah, indeed. That's and
by
Irish trawlers.
English ones and by Russian ones. So there was a lot of activity around that coastline.
Mm. Yeah, but it doesn't... I take that point. Of course there is. They're there all the time. But the USA and NATO manipulated events and bear a heavy responsibility for 35 years of suffering and hardship on the island.
I think they had an influence on it.
Okay.
I think the influence of it was what that other gentleman was sort of saying, that the amount of equipment that was along that coastline for watching the waters... You know, they wanted to keep it there. The Brits wanted to keep it there. The Americans wanted to keep it there. And I'm not saying that that's what caused people's deaths, but I think it had an effect on the troubles. Mm. It was one of the factors that had an effect on it.
Okay, John O'Bourne, thanks indeed. Rosemary McLaughlin in Dublin, you've been there as well.
I just want to give a big thank you to the fact we went there, I don't know, a few years ago now, but my kids we always go up there and we do the treasure hunts and everything in all the villages. And the Isle of Dough, it's like sort of you know, there's nothing around there but except beauty and beaches. There's a beautiful beach beside it, and it has like that sinky sand that when you walk across, footprints are like,
slurpy,
you have
slappy.
To be careful. That you don't get, because when the tide comes in, you could be left on a bit of sand, you know, that way.
So you'd highly recommend the Famine Museum.
And the Famine Village is fantastic. Okay. We went in there, it was 12 quid. We got a big pot of tea and a big plate of biscuits afterwards. It was about an hour and a half. The kids absolutely loved it.
Okay.
So go, go, go.
Okay, go, 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 Pat Doherty. Let us know how you get on, Pat, won't you?
All right, thanks. Good luck.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye.
Bye-bye. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Just talking about memorials and remembering people, be it museums or whatever. This Saturday in Goree in County Wexford, I'll be there because I've taken a particular interest in this book since I read it over a year ago. It's called Boy 11969 by John Cameron. It's an incredible book, an incredible book. If you've read it, a lot of people have got magnificent reviews. Well, Mr. Cameron is still alive, thankfully, and what his community in Oak Hill, which is at the top of Goree, in towards the right after the Garda station and fire station, that what the community in Oak Hill have decided to do because of what was detailed in the book of John's life, being fostered, being Artane, being essentially abandoned by his family, being part of Irish history in terms of court cases, though he only discovered this in terms of marital law a few years ago. But his local community in Oak Hill have decided at 2 o'clock on this Saturday afternoon, they're going to unveil a plaque, not in memory of John, but in honour of John, which is, and all those who've gone through the industrial school process. It's in honour of someone who is alive and in fairly, fairly good physical health. And John himself will be there. I'll be there. Most importantly, the residents of the area will be there to honour the work and the courage of John in through his book, Boy 11969. Brian McDermott. Brian, good afternoon. This is the Battle of the Paddling Pool, not Pacific. The Battle of the Paddling Pool. What happened?
How are you, Joe? Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, yeah.
Yeah. I live in an apartment complex in North Brunswick Street in Dublin 7, yeah?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And about, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when the weather got good, we have a caretaker that works Monday, Wednesday and Friday.
All right.
So we asked him, would he have a problem if we got a paddling pool for the kids to play in?
Okay.
He said, no problem. So I went and bought a paddling pool and kids have been having a ball.
Apps, I've seen them, they're everywhere, everywhere. Front garden.
Last 3 weeks, yeah. The kids, the colour on them, you think they have been in Spain, amazing. Tuesday, this week, I was in the apartment and my partner was downstairs with the child and another mother and her 3 children. And all I can say, the muscles from Brussels came in, yeah?
Okay.
Some guy, I'd say, early 30s.
Right.
And told him to get rid of the pool, or he'd get rid of it.
It's not a pool, it's a paddling pool. A
paddling pool, yeah.
How much was it?
In 50 quid.
50 quid, okay. And how many litres of water are in it?
Oh, I wouldn't have a clue, Joe. No, but it's... We fill it from a tap, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, but there's not a shallow end and a deep end. It's just big.
No,
shallow end.
It's about 9, 12 inches.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all.
Yeah.
But this guy came over and said, either get rid of the pool or I will. So it was only the 2 girls there and they said, what do you mean? Who are you? He said, I'm security. Get rid of the pool.
Okay. And what was it a danger to the children?
No, he didn't. Like this was all he said. So my partner rang me and I went down and I said, who are you?
Yeah.
And he said, I'm security. And he says,
yeah, but what were the grounds for getting rid of the pool?
Well, this is like, if you give me a couple of seconds.
Okay,
yeah?
Sorry, okay.
And I said to him, I said, who are you?
Yeah.
He said, I'm security. And I said, can I see your ID?
Yeah.
And he says, Jonathan rang me. Jonathan is the estate manager, if that's what you call him, yeah? Management company.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I said, what's the problem? He says, Jonathan told me to get rid of pool. And I says, well, there's not, the pool's going nowhere, I said.
Okay.
And he said, I ring Jonathan. So he rang Jonathan and, well, he put the phone to his ear. And then he got into his car and drove off, yeah?
Right.
So yesterday, they didn't have the pillow yesterday because we're going to Grange Garmin to play in the playground.
Okay.
And Jonathan, who, as I say, is the estate manager, drove in. Yeah.
What was the argument? What is the reason why the paddling pool has been burst, so to speak?
Well, he said that he's had a complaint by someone else living here of the noise the kids are making, and that person is working from home.
Okay.
Now, when I bought this apartment, I bought it in a residential apartment complex. I didn't buy it in an office block, yeah?
Yeah, okay.
Now, this, we're talking early afternoon.
Yeah, of course.
Till maybe 5 or 6 in the evening.
In a 30-degree heat wave.
In a 30-degree heat wave. And, you know,
in the middle of a city.
In the middle of the city, yeah.
Where is the nearest beach your children could go to?
Dollymount.
Yeah, well, that's miles away. You can't get on to Dollymount.
But not only that, but, I mean, you know, I have to go to work. So, I mean, you know, we're going on holidays Saturday week down to Kerry for a week.
Okay.
So I have to go to work to pay for that, you know what I mean?
So,
but I mean, you know,
so they're saying the reason that they want rid of the... It's gone now. The reason the
no,
children...
No, it's not gone. It's back up again.
Oh, yeah, back up. Okay, back up. Yeah. The reason they didn't want the paddling pool is not because of water or because of safety or because of children slipping and whatever. It's because of the noise the children are making.
And someone's complained because they're walking from home. Now, this is, as I said to your person this morning, this is a residential apartment complex. This is not an office building or an industrial estate, you know what I mean? Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing about here is, you know, there's kids here from all walks of life, all colours,
yeah,
all religions.
Yeah, brilliant.
And
brilliant.
To see them all playing together, you know, the pool is what kind of... It's amazing. It's just amazing to see them all. There's no inhibitions. They're all in their togs and they're jumping into the pool and it's fabulous. And they're bothering nobody. And when they finish in the early evening, they empty the pool and the mothers go and they take... There wouldn't be a sweet wrapper left.
Excellent, yeah. And after
just one second.
Okay.
When Jonathan came yesterday, he said you never got permission, and the girl said yes, we did. We asked the other, I won't say his name, the caretaker, and he said he has no authority. And he said this is against the rules, and there's only one thing here that says no ball games.
No ball games.
And he said, well, I'm going to change the rules tonight. Now, like, I don't know who this guy thinks.
And now, but change them to what? No paddling pools?
No paddling pools, yeah.
Okay. And what are your management fees there, Brian, for example?
About £1,500 a year.
And how many children were using this little paddling pool?
I'd say about 6 or 7.
And the noise was too much for the home
workers? The noise was too much for the... And by the way...
And remember, most of the home workers have headphones on.
Well, but Joe, I think, as I said to your person this morning... This is going to be something that's going to crop up again. These are not commercial buildings. These are where children are growing up.
Good point. Very good point.
And the children, you know, have to be able to play. And, I mean, a lot of the residents here are here from DCC, Dublin City Council.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you telling me that Dublin City Council are putting families into complexes where the kids can't play?
Very good point.
Because someone has to, you know... Because one of these multinationals have decided to let the people work from home so the kids can't go out. So they stay in their houses all day.
Well, that's impossible in Ireland. We don't live like that. We love...
Well, no, we don't. But if something's not done about this,
well, even
this is the
even
way
when
they want it to live.
Even when they built Ballymun, Brian,
yeah.
Back in the day, and it was probably before your time, but I remember...
not before my time,
okay,
ago. I'm not a young fella.
Okay, but one of the arguments, remember there used to be playgrounds on either side of the... And one of the arguments the council used to say was we put in those playgrounds, and there were some fantastic playgrounds. We put in those playgrounds so that the mothers and fathers could look down on their children playing from the balcony.
Right. Exactly.
And you're saying you put in a little harmless paddling pool in the middle of a heat wave and you were told get rid of it because the children are doing what children are doing, enjoying themselves.
With permission, Joe. With permission. And by the way, yesterday he threatened.
Okay,
sorry. He told the girls if they put the pool up again that they would get a solicitor's letter. Now, I would love to go to court, Joe.
Okay.
And stand in front of a judge and explain why I put a paddling pool on a grass playing area
for
children in 30 degrees.
Yeah.
And just to get back to, you know, you said about vintage. My vintage, Joe, I had Paddy Crosby How do you call it Barney in fifth class?
In North Brunswick Street.
In Brunner, yeah. I'm born and raised around here, and I had Paddy in fifth class.
Anyway, my father was taught by Paddy Crosby as well. That's a long time ago. Yeah, what was the school around the corner? What was it like?
It's the school around the corner, just the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is ridiculous, and you know.
But I think you're making a much, and you know it's a strong point because you said it was, that on the one hand, we're now told we're moving towards apartment living. The government now have ads on the radio saying they want people to move to a blended working arrangement from home and the office. But it means you can't turn, excellent point, you cannot turn an apartment building into a commercial building.
No, and that is what they're trying to do.
Okay, well said. And by the way, surely the people who are working from home with in Dublin 7, surely they hear sirens and traffic noise and...
Well, we're right beside the Mater Hospital. And you know, like where we put the pool, we put it there because there's a tap on the side of... It's like an office building. It's like a bungalow where the management company do all their business. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's no one living in there. The closest people, and you know, we only put it there because that's where the tap is and we fill it from a hose.
Okay.
But I mean, to turn around and say that someone has complained because, you know, they're working from home and there's six or seven kids having a ball, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when it's all over, the place is clean. Tidy.
And is there anything? I saw it yesterday. I was driving home around 5 o'clock through Sheriff Street and every second house had a paddling pool and they have a small front garden. Every second house had a paddling pool and all you do is smile when you see it.
But this is not inner city Dublin, you know?
No.
This is not Malahide.
Yeah.
You know, as you said earlier, the sea is too far away. I mean, you can't walk to the sea from here. And if the fathers or the mothers are in work, well, you'll have to wait till they come home. And then if you go to the beach, you can't sit down because it's packed.
Yeah, it's packed at the minute, yeah. Okay, so the paddling pool is staying, Brian.
The paddling pool is up there now, Joe, as we speak. And the kids are diving into it and banging their heads on the grass, and it's great.
And you're standing, the
parents... The mothers are down there, yeah.
And they're standing...
I'm minding the dog. We can't bring the dog down.
And they're standing over it, so to speak.
And I'll probably get a solicitor's letter now tomorrow or the next day. Because I put a paddling pool.
Okay, let us know if you get it. If you're in deep water, Brian, let us know. Okay,
well, it won't
Brian.
Be deep water, Joe. It'll be shallow water, yeah. Okay.
You're not out of your depth anyway, Brian. Fair play to you.
It's either sink or swim, Joe.
Okay, I'm waving you goodbye. Good luck, Brian. Bye bye.
Ahoy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715
815. And joe@rt.ie is our simple email. Yesterday we spoke to Ian McGarvey and, among other things, we took a ramble on the times of it. And he mentioned that he was 67 years married to Marjorie, 67. And I mentioned that last week I was reading about Jimmy and Rosalind Carter, former President of the United States of America. And they celebrate their 75th wedding anniversary. And I said, if we it'd be great if we could see that today. We would probably never see it again in terms of the social and cultural changes. Neville Steedman contacted us. Neville, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
Good, thanks. You are in your 60s.
That's right, Joe.
And you want to celebrate the marriage of your parents, who thankfully are still alive. And how long are they married, Neville?
They'd be 75 years married in October.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and they're both living at home, and we have home help for them for the 7-day period, which is absolutely brilliant. The home help is absolutely great, you know.
Okay, and I know Tess is on the line. Tess Steedman.
Hello, how are you, Joe?
How are you, Keith? Congratulations.
And Joe, I met you when we were down in Kilgorman because we had our own place down there.
Oh, yeah,
down
in Wexford, yeah. And Tess...
Yeah, but we haven't got it anymore, love, you know.
Okay, and congratulations.
Our car and all is gone. Bye-bye.
Okay, and Tess, congratulations.
Thank you very much, indeed.
Do you remember where you met your husband?
I do. Indeed, I do. I was a bridesmaid to the girl he was getting, his brother was getting married, and he was the best man.
Okay.
And he's never looked after anyone, only me since then.
And he's never looked back, has he?
I know, and then the first we have a photograph then. I've all the photographs taken and when we got engaged. You know, engaged first.
Back in the day.
That's a long time ago. I wouldn't like to tell you that. But anyway, we all had a great time.
And
my grandmother gave me a lovely reception. She has a big, beautiful place.
And Tess,
down
will you,
in Drumcondra, and we Dublin. Had...
Yeah, okay. And will you have a special celebration for your 75th wedding anniversary?
We're gone beyond this love. we're gone beyond this.
You're telling
this
me to wind my neck back in again. Okay, why? What do you mean you're gone beyond it?
Well, the point is this now, Joe.
Okay.
I think David and I are nearly... We're packing it up. And we're leaving it to the two boys,
okay.
Trevor and Neville.
Right.
And, I mean, there's nothing more we can do. We're the last of each of the different families.
Okay, well, apparently a 75th wedding anniversaries are so rare that it's only recently that they've tried to put a name on. I think it's called a second diamond wedding anniversary.
Oh, second diamond, oh, really nice. Very nice.
And what's the secret for a long marriage, Tess?
Dylan, kill your husband.
Now, what's the secret?
Try and help with one another.
Okay.
Try and help with one another and do our best. No, we had our ups and downs. We had our only daughter was killed on it. That's the only thing, but I have the two boys who are little angels.
And what age?
And their wives.
What age was your only daughter, Tess?
She was 22, I think, or 22 or 23.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear
and
that.
She was married and all. That's another story.
Yeah,
it's very
I understand.
And her husband and all.
Okay. And where did you work above in Dublin, Tess?
Well, now, in Dublin, when I was young, I lived in Lean Company, the wholesalers, on Wellington Quay.
Okay.
That's where I worked. And then when I went to live in Drimlin, I worked in Our Lady's Hospital in Crumlin.
Okay.
I was one of the cashiers there.
Oh, of course, Our Lady's. And can I ask, are the two of you the same age, Tess?
How old was I, David? I was 96.
Yeah.
There. At the 1st of July.
Okay.
And David will be 96, the 22nd of August.
Oh, he's younger than you.
Yeah, well, you see, I married a toy boy.
Brilliant. Well, you must mark your 75th wedding anniversary, Tess. We'll do something. Ronan Collins will play you a nice request or whatever, hopefully, on the day. So, Tess Steedman and David Steedman, congratulations. Neville,
thank you very much indeed, Joe. And thank you very much for ringing us.
Okay, and thank you.
And thank you to our son and his wife, Neville and Therese.
You're simply the best, Tess. And we'll see you soon, I hope, on our travels.
Thanks indeed.
God, mind yourself.
And thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Back tomorrow. 1:45, Fergus Sweeney produced. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.